Captain Zgurovic Carucci going to the hotline to be joined by the third member of our squad, the one and only Gerard Cherry. Gerard, the Browns did not win, same as it's been now 3 weeks in a row, but I felt a lot better about watching this game. How did you feel coming out of this particular loss relative to the other ones, and what are the things that were encouraging to you?
Well, I won't be a hypocrite and bash, because I bashed Jerry Jones for saying it's a moral victory, but I was encouraged, to say the least, guys. Because I went to this game thinking the Browns stood no chance in this game, that Jason Campbell would look horrific. And early on, it was a struggle, but to his credit and to this team's credit, they responded, they stayed in the game, and they showed the wherewithal to put up a fight. So I was encouraged, and even though it was a loss, I would say impressed that they fought. I mean, when you're in the midst of a losing streak, the hardest thing to do is to go out there and lay it on the line, and these guys responded to Jason Campbell. So I was happy to see that. That leads me going into this week, actually encouraged, sending myself that, hey, with another week as a starter, you can potentially beat the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, Gerard, that's where I am too. I expected, as you did, a Browns loss, and I wasn't calling it a close game. Nathan did. You and I were more on the side of it being more of a one-sided type of loss.
Right.
But my reasons had, I guess, a little less to do with Jason Campbell making mistakes as much as just the inability to block for him, and that would overall, the offensive malaise would carry over. We saw malaise in the first half,
but it wasn't
the kind of malaise that came from him being sacked, certainly, and turnovers and short fields. It just was a team that can't function or doesn't function well at the start. What is the solution for that?
Really, the solution is, in my opinion, that you go hurry up offense, go into that mode. Tempo, 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 and it forces guys just to get used to the mindset of we got to do something quick, fast, in a hurry. I've seen coaches employ that to some success. If that doesn't work, then you're pretty much up a creek without a paddle, and you're hoping that guys just execute at a high level and concentrate more so at the beginning of a game and come out there with the energy and the effort necessary to sustain a drive in the first quarter when you first possess the ball.
When you talk about this team and you talk about the improvement that Jason Campbell brought and the competency that he brought to the quarterback position, what is it that you saw from him that stood out to you as the biggest difference maker? Was it the decision making? Was it the movement in the pocket? Was it all of the above?
It was all the above. But really what stood out the most for me was a pocket presence, in that, okay, someone's coming, I can elude that rusher and I can sustain a drive, I can sustain a play, I can keep a play alive, and I'm not just going to be sacked once someone comes into my field of vision or into my area and surrounds me, then I'm gonna go down. So that, along with making the wise and prudent decisions with the football, was encouraging, man. And I'm sure that his teammates fed off that as well, was saying to themselves, wow, we got a chance with him back there.
That's the thing too. I saw a revived team offensively. You could say a revived team overall, but especially on offense, that the response of guys like Josh Gordon and Jordan Cameron, for the most part, they all seem to be, I don't know, playing at another level, because I think they were inspired that they had a chance with this guy.
Right, and that's fair to say, because if you assume as an offensive skill player that, hey, if the former quarterback was back there, chances are he's going to get sacked, something negative is going to happen. If that's in the forefront of your mind and you're thinking that way, it's going to express itself through your physical actions. And at some point in the course of that game, when Jason Campbell started escaping the rush and eluding it, and the offensive line was provided time, guys start, like a Josh Gordon, Jordan Cameron, start saying to themselves, man, we can make something happen here. I will have an opportunity to make a play and to get my name in the paper. Now, obviously, that didn't apply for Devon Best. We don't know what his struggles is. I hope he finds it out and corrects it quick, fast, in a hurry, because you don't want to blame a loss on one guy. But he played a pivotal part in the reason why the Browns were not able to win that game.
And take us inside the head of a player like Devon Best. What is going on with him? This is a guy who was caught, you know, nearly two-thirds of the passes thrown his way for his career.
Right.
He's dropping the ball now. He comes up as a guy who's known for his sure hands, and he's having, you know, a slump. It's akin to a hitter that can't hit the ball right now. Take us into the mind of Devon Best. What's he thinking, and how can a player like that get out of this type of a funk?
I think he's going through the same thing Brandon Whedon has gone through, in that you're trying so hard, you want it so bad, and you want to make things happen, because Devon understands the pressure that's on him. If the offense is struggling, I got to make a play. You're trying so hard and you want to make the play that you don't make the play because your hands are tight and it's pretty much like stones trying to catch a football, and it's not going to happen. You have to be in this. You have to be relaxed. And it's amazing, man, that when you want something so bad that it affects your ability to actually do something that you are physically gifted to do, and mentally you just dry up and you cause yourself to do things that you normally not accustomed to because you're trying too hard. So I think in his case, it's doing too much and not because of lack of ability, because like you just said, Nathan, throughout the course of his career, he's caught the football consistently.
Right. Gerard Cherry making his regular appearance here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Stay tuned. In about, 5 or 6 minutes, he will be aboard with Bruce Hooley. Hooley and Gerard coming up next here on ESPN 850 WKNR. Gerard, let's flip it to the defense and the problems that this team had in the first half, especially getting off the field on third down, allowing all of those bubble plays, those screen plays, those space plays that Jamaal Charles and they went through and had Dexter McCluster also having that success. But it just was a consistent thing that was such a problem for the defense. As you watched it, and I know they corrected this ultimately in the second half, but it was enough to basically, you could point to that obviously as a big difference maker in this loss.
Yeah, you can point to that. You can also add to that poor field position and understand, again, on the defensive side, a lack of urgency and the need to get these guys, that being the Chiefs, off the football field. And then you throw in there Vic, the mental errors on that one touchdown to McCluster. Who's covering him? I'm pretty sure there's no defense that says leave this vertical seam wide open. So yeah, that's an easy correction and adjustment to make. Just do your job and your responsibility. I think that all stems off of, again, being frustrated with the offense. Okay, are these guys going to show up and play? And once they started playing, wasn't it kind of miraculous in the sense that once they started playing, did you not notice the defense started playing too?
Yes,
and
it did.
Guys start flying around. Guys start making plays and start making tackles. So I'm convinced that this is all a situation of being frustrated with the poor offensive play, and it got into the defensive mindset.
It did, and the momentum clearly turned. I thought it was a risky thing to kick that long field goal by Andy Reid, and they missed the quick touchdown, and that's really what got the Browns back in the game. If all of a sudden they got pinned down inside the five, who knows what would have happened. So I think the momentum had a lot to do with it, and the defense getting a little bit fired up had something to do with it as well. We've talked about this every week, Gerard. Third downs, getting off the field on third downs. Again, over 50% third down conversion rate for the Chiefs here. We saw the blitz become much more effective in the second half, but it also leaves itself vulnerable to some of the screens, as Vic brought up. Did you see anything this week that you thought might be a positive that this third down defense is almost there, or still same old, same old?
It's getting better, Nathan. Thing is, though, when your pass rush is working as an offensive coordinator, that's the first thing you're going to go to is a bunch of screens. So that's also a credit to that front four, that front seven, doing their job of getting pressure on Alex Smith throughout the course of the day. But those screens are designed to take away that heat, the pressure that the defense builds, so you're going to see that. But still, I walk away from this game. It wasn't stellar because you didn't win, but encouraged because the defense picked it up and showed that they are capable of playing at a high level, and the offense showed that it is capable of playing competent football. Now, you guys discussed the loss of Travis Benjamin, and that's going to be a huge loss and hard to replace, if not impossible. But I've still walked away from this game encouraged because I saw guys fighting still, and I have not seen that past couple weeks.
Gerard, thank you, and we will catch up with you again tomorrow, my friend.
All right, take care, guys.
Later, Gerard.
He is Gerard Cherry again. Hooley and Gerard coming up after this show. Dave DiNatale, we got some barks in the form of tweets from the Pound.
Yes, we always have tweetage in the. And I got this one on email, and he's a good emailer.
All right.
So for all three of us, in our opinion, is Joe Thomas overrated? Past couple of years, he's not been the same player he was when he came in, according to Michael Taylor.
I'm going to say no to that. I think even guys who have gone to six consecutive Pro Bowls, heading possibly for a seventh, I know the Pro Bowls definitely put more heat and light on what a guy does, but I don't know that I'd say overrated. I think he still remains a linchpin to this offensive line that is a pass protection driven O-line.
I would agree with that, and I still think he's one of the best pass-protecting tackles in the NFL. And ultimately, is he, you know, a guy who's going to be able to pass-protect and maul you in the run game? No, but if you had to pick one in today's National Football League, you'll take a pass-protecting tackle like Joe Thomas, and I guarantee you 31 other general managers in the NFL and 31 other head coaches in the NFL and 31 other quarterbacks in the NFL would all love to have Joe Thomas as their left tackle.
He had a bad game, but he's still on our team.
Me too.
What else, Dino? That's it. You want to? Oh, come on.
Yeah, we gotta get out. Sorry.
All right, we gotta set the table here now for the next crew to come in. And again, Julian Gerard is next. Vic Carucci, Nathan Zagura. We will be with you again tomorrow. We want to thank, of course, Tom Withers and Doug Deacon for being part of this show. Jameer Howerton, along with Alex Mack, for being contributing what they did. Our outstanding producer, Dave DiNatale. Megan Rock doing the tweets throughout the show. And also, she'll be putting together Browns Daily Wrap. Check that out. I highly encourage that on ClevelandBrowns.com. It will be posted later today. For Nathan, I'm Vic. We'll talk to you again tomorrow on Cleveland Browns Daily.
Driven by Liberty Ford. Here we go, Brownies. Here we go.
The preceding program was a production of the Cleveland Browns and a part of the Browns Media Network.